Thank you for listening to the Weekly Market Outlook. It is our pleasure to bring an industry-leading market analyst to provide you with the most value possible in your farm business. Please reach out anytime by emailing cbarron@agviewsolutions.com.
Welcome, everybody, to another episode of the AgView Pitch, and we are heading into a new marketing week, actually the first week of September, so we're pretty excited to see what happens with the markets. We're lucky enough to have Grant Schimek with us, Black Oak Financial. Grant, how's it going?
Great. You?
Good. Doing really good. And then also we have another person on board here today to help us pick on you. We've got Paul Niefer. How's it going, Paul?
I'm doing really good.
Good. We've got Paul here with us. So I don't know, we're ganging up on the market advisor here today. We got two question askers and one person with the answers. So we'll see how you do with the answers, Grant.
Okay.
Sounds good. So I guess what I want to do, I'll start out with the first question. And then I think Paul's got a few questions here he wants to throw at you too, Grant. But, you know, just watching what we've seen with the market, a little bit of volatility here lately, you know, a little pressure a week or so ago, and just kind of what we're seeing in the market, what are some of the key drivers that you're watching as we head towards harvest and some things for producers to be watching?
I think number one, given the calendar basis, if we're going to stay open, I think staying open on basis into harvest is not a good idea if you're going to plan on moving it off the combine. That's probably another question. If you can carry something into, at the very least, late November, if not December, then there's invariably or usually good basis opportunities then. But you know, we're in a situation where basis in most locales is not bad for harvest. So that's not a risk I personally want to take. Not everywhere, but definitely we've seen some significant basis erosion in the last 2-3 weeks. Soybeans more so than corn, and some of the eastern areas basis was narrowed up quite a bit, and then they realized there was a little bit shorter availability of old crop stocks, and then the basis, you know, I know in some Indiana locations set a firm right back up again to keep the 2020 crop grain still flowing in, but when it comes to the new crop, that's not a risk I personally want to take.
You're speaking to basically both corn and soybeans. I mean, as far as, and you're basically, I think what you're saying is we start getting the combines rolling in any given area, basis is going to erode extremely fast, basically is what you're telling us, right?
Yeah, I believe so. Okay. I mean, to say that it's going to, I don't want to use the word implode or anything. It's just that if we look at something that, you know, if historically in your area, you're at a harvest basis of 25, 30 under, and today you're looking at 10 or 15 under. Can we go out to 20 or 23? Absolutely. Mm-hmm. So I don't want to make it seem like it's going to fall apart, but it's probably not going to hold together. It's that time of year where if you don't have a plan going into that, it's time for the entities to buy grain, widen out, and see who doesn't have a plan and make some extra coin on it.
Mm-hmm. And the other thing I think too, just I know a lot of people have taking the time to actually call where the grain's going to go. And sometimes you can negotiate a little better in posted numbers too, if you do have a plan, right? Rather than just making the decision at the last minute too.
True.
So right. Yeah, that's good. What about on the price side of that? So that's the basis piece of it. What about the unpriced bushels that, you know, some of these areas that have caught some rains and maybe the yield's going to be a little better than they thought it was going to be. You know, we're seeing the opposite in the east. You know, their crop's kind of going backwards now. It's been over there the last few weeks, and I've watched kind of a trading places occur. You know, to the east, they've been dry, and then the west has been catching rain now, and it's kind of, you know, it's kind of saved the crops in some areas, or at least stopped the loss anyway. And then, you know, in the east, it's taken some bushels off the top. So what do you say to those producers that are sitting there, well, maybe this crop's a little better than I thought. You know, I was thinking, you know, X number of bushels. Now it's, you know, maybe it's 20% better. I don't have room for those bushels. What's your price timing and what are you looking for there, both on corn and soybeans?
I'm still a believer that given the cost production for the 20 crop or 21 crop, excuse me, that the gross ROIs are high enough and giving us a strong basis that I would be pricing it and moving it off the combine. Now, to say that I think that we're going to just fall apart and there's no reason to stay up, not at all. You can find lots of reasons to be bullish. I'm not willing to be very bullish. I definitely wouldn't personally want to carry more than half unpriced into the fourth quarter, given the return on investment I see.
And you're saying half unpriced of the bushels that got to go off the combine.
Well, actually, I'm seeing half unpriced of what of a conservative estimate of what you know, which you're confident you have today.
Okay.
No, I think the ROIs justify it. Let alone if you have to move it off the combine, then that's, you know, depending on storage. If you're an individual that doesn't have a large percentage of storage, no, I don't think it justifies it carrying it out. Now, if you want to have some gambling bushels to see, I mean, you can easily make the case that we should see a $6 cash price on corn and a firm bean price at some point in that second quarter and have an opportunity. I'm probably not as aggressive on that because of the returns I see. I'd rather take the risk on next year's crop, which we, you know, definitely on the corn, the budgets aren't as enticing. So I'd rather swing for the fences there if I'm going to do that type of thing than look at this year's crop with what appears to me to be a kind of a bird in the hand, two in the bush guessing game.
Mm-hmm. Paul, do you got any questions?
Yep. Yeah, you know, again, we're talking corn and soybeans. Since I'm out on the West Coast and grew up on a wheat farm, I'm just curious, Grant, you know, pricing has really been very, very strong for what we grow out there, which is soft white. We're almost $11 per bushel on wheat out there. You know, hard red, soft red, it's all in that $7, $8, $9 range. Is there, you think there's much more upside, or should farmers be thinking to be fairly aggressive about if they haven't marketed their wheat, go ahead and get that wheat marketed? I'm just curious what your thoughts are.
The spring wheat can be a maverick. You know, when you look at some of these patterns, I wouldn't want to walk away from everything on spring wheat. The other crops, probably a different story. And we may see a fair amount of wheat acres for next year on the other two. But as far as spring wheat, I would not want to run away from that market. I'd want to keep something there. And this year, of course, it's hard to have a lot to sell. And there's, from what I understand of some commentaries and people I've talked to in spring wheat country, there is, I think, a realization in the merchandising community that, wow, it's not there because they're not able to get the bushels, and we keep seeing these pushes to just get things flowing and keep it moving.
Yeah, yeah. And then over on the hog side, you know, we've seen you know, a report that came out that China is estimated to have a little bit smaller herd next year, and some of the commentators are saying, okay, that's going to be a reduction in exports of either corn or beans by the U.S. to China. But I guess my thoughts are potentially that means there might be more hog or pig exports from the U.S. to China, and we're going to have to grow that or consume that feed that might have been exported. Is that a valid thought, or is that really something that's already been priced into the market?
I think putting a number on that price is tough. And I would assume that the exports of hogs are going to be, it's going to be breeding stock to be more of a build-out issue. And yeah, there's going to be demand for soy meal and so forth and corn, but we might be looking at something that is going to take some time to build out. So I guess I don't necessarily disagree, but on the front end, it might be hard to grasp those numbers.
Gotcha. Hey, Chris here again. I was just thinking as you guys were talking there, coming back to where you started with on basis a little bit, and another question that just kind of popped into my head that I know a lot of people are thinking about when it comes to storage too is, not only do you have excess bushels, but you know, when you look at the carry in the market or the lack of carry, probably is maybe a better way to put it. But are you a fan of storing, you know, just sticking with the corn and trying to get all the beans off out of there and not messing around with storing the beans, or what's your thought there?
I'm probably biased to that because I assume, and this is going to feed into the corn also, is we're going to see another very big crop, or at least they're going to try their darndest to get as many acres in as possible in the Southern Hemisphere. Mm-hmm. And when we look at the basis, you know, corn for one, if you're going to store it, absolutely roll it out to March. But there's not much there to work with right now if you're going to try to get out to May or July.
Right.
And if you do have a big South American crop, that may just end up hindering the carry that we do see in both corn and beans to roll into. Mm-hmm. Rolling November hedges out to Jan, absolutely. And I think there's some basis improvement to be typically seen there. But are you going to have a lot of opportunity to roll beans March to May, things like that? Probably not. And
so get rid of the beans anyway if you can. That's probably.
Yeah, and historically, this is typically the way it is. It's typically more return.
Yep.
At this time, you're looking at the market for corn storage, typically, not less so this year. And in many years, because of the large South American production, there's not a lot of carry past January on futures, on the board anyway. Mm-hmm. But if you look back historically, it's many times the futures appreciation opportunity has been better for storing soybeans. Mm-hmm. If you take basis and that out, and many times it does pay. So I don't want to say it historically, the odds are in your favor to store beans. No, it's not that bad of an idea. Mm-hmm. I'm just not on board with it this year. I think what we have, our risks, the unknown risks are greatest when profitability is this high.
Right.
And whether it be a geopolitical black swan, so forth, we can imagine with the events of the last week that it's not, those aren't good signs of stability. Now, you can talk at length about the risks of the market, and some of these things might actually be inflationary risks, and it could be positive for price anyway. And that's true, but I guess I'm always cautious of Murphy showing up and it being a negative and not a positive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. When you talk about, you know, maybe rolling that Dease corn out to the March, you know, that's managing some of those bushels. And then when you look at cash flows, I mean, I'm always looking at this stuff from the expense side, but, you know, you look at cash flows and the income that needs to come in. What price, I mean, from, and you're about the one of the best technical analysts that I know. So as far as looking at the market from a technical standpoint, are there some price points that you're shooting for from a technical perspective between now and then that, you know, those unsold bushels are some target areas that we should be looking at, or what's your thought there?
As of right now, like with corn, you definitely would need to fade the recent highs of the last report. We came off two very bullish WASDE reports, and we spiked, and then we haven't just not gotten anywhere. So we got to 594 and I believe a half on the last day of the last WASDE report. You probably would need to fade that. I mean, if you get into even the 572 or 587 zone on December futures, there's probably a point to doing that also. And then on November beans, if we can get any kind of spike, I'd tell you like 13, anywhere in the 1360s to low 1380s. And is going to be the most I would reach for at this point. In the context of what we know today, we're going to need some kind of gas on the fire or something to boost it here. Otherwise, we're coming up into that point seasonally where you take soybeans, for example, the average seasonal low dates the last 5 years on soybeans are probably right in this last few days of August. And then we'll have 1 to 3 weeks of rebound seasonally. But then into early October, you tend to take a hit. And that's logical with the harvest pressure and so forth. So, I mean, we pretty much have a week or two left to where a normal window is open for something positive to happen.
What's the downside risk on both in corn and beans then if we got that 572, 582-ish maybe to kind of reach for the stars and the 1360 or 1380? What's the, you know, if we go the other way, where's the risk? Because, you know, you look at even $5 corn or $13 beans with basis considered, you know, cash on farm, it's given us ROI numbers that are pretty spectacular, even with those price levels.
That's right.
So, you know, is there anything to the downside that's a threat that you're concerned at that you would be, you know, try to be in front of that?
Right. So as we come into the next WASDE report, if by chance we do find a bushel or, you know, 1 to 3 bushels of yield,
right,
the USDA does, you know, that the USDA is always trading, you're trading the USDA or trading reality, and those could be two different things, I understand, from an individual's perspective. But if they would lop on, you know, 1 to 3 bushels, we're taking, in my opinion, this market, bean market drops a dollar easy. And it's been a very lethargic price action. It's probably wanted to go down, but the weather complications have held it up. Mm-hmm. And as we've mitigated, at least in the Western Corn Belt, a lot with moisture. And we're getting to the point where with the calendar here, that we're getting pretty locked in on this crop to where weather is getting to be a dying issue also. So being solid dollar, I'd tell you, I think that 1180 to 1210 is a logical breakdown point. And I'm talking about soybeans and on corn, the beans have a shot at breaking that far. Well, corn would, what I would assume if that's the case, then be in that 520 to 490 zone. And if we have some other outlier events, we can, you know, corn in particular, look how much time corn spent the preceding 6.5 years with its highs in that 437 to 445 zone. So we could get right on top of that. And I know that's hard to believe. And if you look at the numbers, that's not justified. But, you know, maybe the numbers we got to on the upside weren't justified. So we can swing it that far to the downside, I think, as we go into harvest.
Grant, this is Paul. What about, you know, we're basically talking about 2021 crop. What about the 2022 crop? Would you be advising locking in some of those prices now and getting some of that crop sold?
If you definitely on the corn side, if you've gone out and you've pointed up the money to get these inputs, especially the nitrogen is lossy, in my opinion, you've got to cover some of that risk. Now, whether it be with getting a percent, 15% or something like that covered, depending on how much your inputs you've covered, or doing some kind of option strategy. Like a put call spread to give yourself some upside, given you may not be locking in a lot of margin, even at APH. Soybeans a little bit different. I think you could be as upwards of 20% sold, in my opinion, because a lot of these budgets when I've walked through this with a few people, costs of producing beans are up and not nearly as dramatically as much as corn. Probably could produce an acre of beans for many people just above $600 an acre. So there's a lot more worth protecting there where you could just sell it and not play any options games or so forth when it comes to beans. And there's not too many years, I think, that we're going to have back-to-back massive ROI. So we have one solid one that appears to in front of us. And if we can have some 12, 15% starting points for gross ROIs for next year on soybeans, for example, I think that's worth it.
I love what you said there, Grant, on if you're buying the inputs, maybe you should think about, you know, because that's like an everyday conversation I'm having with clients right now as we roll the 21 budget over into 22 and you start looking at it. And, you know, we're seeing opportunities aggregated on average on corn about a 9% ROI on average aggregated with our clients and versus, you know, a 25% this year is sort of the average projected right now. And so, you know, it's just one of those things where, you know, if you're locking in one side, we better be careful. Cause I think that happened, wasn't it, Grant, back in like 2008 going into 2009, the inputs went up, a lot of people bought the inputs and then they didn't sell anything on the other side of it. And so, you know, and what we're looking at is a lot of our clients are, you know, probably have 50 to 60% of their costs locked in, you know, possibly some of the operations that are going to have some land rent increases, it looks like, you know, obviously. But, you know, if you're a producer that's got land pretty well locked in, and you've got your rents locked in and or your principal and interest payments, and you've got your machinery and equipment locked in, and you purchase your fertilizer and lock your seed in, all of a sudden, you know, your 60, 65% of your total cost production is locked in. So,
right,
you know, not selling anything is a, you know, it, I think it's putting
you
a lot of risk.
One on, risk for another.
Exactly. Yeah.
Especially since you have the volatility to wait all the way until next spring to lock in your insurance price. You know, right mm-hmm. now you just don't know what that's going to be.
Yeah. What do you tell a person, Grant, that says, well, that all sounds great, but I don't have any clue what my yield's going to be? And so, you know, we plug in, you know, a five-year average is how we're doing that to come up with these costs. You know, what strategy do you tell somebody that doesn't want to, you know, make a sale or whatever?
Well, I'm not going to, you know, they don't see the appeal to it. It's not in their... not something they want to do, but otherwise the only answer is to create a floor. And so they have a choice. They've managed some risk, but then they're still wide open.
Right.
And they don't, you know, they're not as feel as though they're trapped in a decision. Mm-hmm. Got to give it as much flexibility as possible.
Yeah.
I mean, the worst part about the current markets is they're going nowhere, and it makes everybody complacent. Mm-hmm. And typically this price action, this, basically since second week of July, reminds me a lot of the first probably 10 years I was in the business in that late 1990s, early 2000s, where once you got to the June crop report, the game is over. And it typically is over and has been for most years at that point. But we have had very little volatility. And it usually would pick up historically right around September in most markets. In the financial trading realm, The B team are running the trading desk in August, and once we get past Labor Day, the A team is back in place and things start to happen. And I would assume that we will see that type of thing take place as we go into September. So meaning it's not going to be this quiet, and hopefully it's good surprises, but you know, that's the risk we take.
Right. Yeah. One of the final things I had, unless Paul's got some other stuff too, but as we have these meetings, and I'll send you our spreadsheet, and if anybody listened to this wants this spreadsheet and wants to look at our aggregated data, I'll send it to you. But the big thing that we're starting to see, and we've talked to some bankers in the last week about this that's going on too, is we're noticing that, you know, the cost production on corn is going to be up about $150 an acre. Actually, it's $147 an acre right now is what we're seeing. So the capital requirement, if you're running the same acres, is significantly more. On 1,000 acres, you know, you're going to need, just on your corn crop, you're going to need another $150,000 of working capital to manage the business. And then on soybeans, we're seeing about a $63 an acre increase. And so, you know, on 1,000 acres, you know, you're of soybeans, you know, or 1,500 acres of soybeans, you're going to be looking at maybe another $80,000 of working capital. You add all that up, it just comes down to it's going to take some more money. So it'll be interesting to see how people look at these crop rotations and stuff. I still think you got to look at it, you know, based on your individual situation, your own agronomics. But I don't know. Right. Any comments on that, Grant, at all? Or
well, when it comes down to that, given where mill 22 beans are, I would much rather swing more acres that way if you're logistically and agronomically inclined to. Some people are not going to do that. They're not going to change their rotation, and that's just fine. I have had clients who swung aggressively in ways I would never even imagined a number of times over the years, and it worked out.
Mm-hmm.
And if, so I'd rather do that than push the limits with financially. If corn is looking expensive, I'd rather go heavier beans. And if you did it the right way, you probably could, you know, especially if you use future sales or options and you're not committed, if this ratio or this mix changes over the next 6 months before we get to planting, it doesn't mean you can't go back to beans.
Mm-hmm.
If some of these input prices swing back. But of course, that will take money to do also, won't it? So
right.
I mean, some of these challenges are going to be there. You just come at it a different way.
Right, right. Well, I think, you know, this is a conversation that will continue for a while on the 22, yeah. But I think this is these are good conversations to have. And, you know, the whole thing we're always trying to do is bring some perspective to our listeners and make sure that, you know, everybody's thinking through these things to the best of their ability and their individual operation. And so I think this has been a great conversation, Grant and Paul. Really appreciate you guys joining us today on the Agview Pitch. Really appreciate it. Thanks, guys.
No problem. Thanks a lot.
Yeah, great to be here.
Yeah, it's good having you guys. And again, thanks everybody for listening. If anybody wants this spreadsheet, you can email either me or Shay, and we can get this to you, and it'll give you an idea of kind of what we're seeing that's aggregated, and then also you could plug your own numbers in it, and it's a pretty interesting to kind of look at what we're seeing here. And if you want any questions on that, also, if you're a client, give us a call, and we'll talk through these things. So again, we had Paul Niefer with us, and Grant Shemick with Black Oak Financial. Thanks, everybody, for listening. We'll catch you again next time on the AgView Pitch.